Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this June the 23rd on the West Coast, now June the 24th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those listening around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network and also on the Internet on BlogTalkRadio.com. Lots of news to report. Seems that a couple of robots, deep-sea robots, ended up damaging a cap that was on the well. I don't know if that's a true story. Robotic creatures that BP was able to get down there to cap the well were successful only to trip up and damage it. So the cap situation still isn't resolved. Now, it sounds like a bit of a fairy tale in light of all the other information we've been reporting about this catastrophe in the Gulf of Mexico. It's par for the course. Nevertheless, you know, we wish those that are actually trying to stop this from polluting the oceans of the world, we wish them the best of luck in that endeavor, and we are going to continue to bring forth solutions that are available. Eventually, someone's going to hear and say, hey, let's try this. This sounds like it will work. That's all we're asking for, folks. Putting our intention on this, as I've stated on some past shows, can actually affect an outcome, just like when we talked about weather and putting our intention on world events and the outcome of disease. If when we pray for others and we pray for their deliverance from a disease, we experience miracles. Not doing so guarantees us that we won't experience any miracles whatsoever. Now, I've talked about the weather. In fact, we've had some pretty crazy weather in Ohio today and throughout the Midwest, for that matter. Many states are experiencing some very unusual thunderstorms, tornadic activity. And my part of the country got hit twice today, early this afternoon and very early in the morning. We're speaking about within the past hour. And I sincerely want to inform you that I played a role, along with some others, who were redirecting the inclement weather that was coming upon us. And we actually stated our intention to some other people who were quite interested in the declarations we had made. And we told them, you'll experience nothing more than a light spring shower. And that's exactly what happened, though we were being promised the potential of tornadic activity, as well as this evening. In fact, they were basically on the weather radios signaling every minute or so that we were in for some very severe storms. And so this evening I got a call from Dr. Mike Castle, who's a frequent guest on the show, and he said, hey, you've got another system coming your way. This looks like a doozy. Batten down the hatches. And I informed him that we were going to deal with this like we've done seven other times in the past couple of weeks. Right now we're 8-for-8, and the HARP is 0-for-8. And I have to tell you, this event this evening came through the area pretty fast, and I waited until it was just on the outskirts of where I live, and I've got screenshots that I took of the Doppler radar to show you how this thing broke up as it was commanded to. Now, if we can do this with the weather, folks, we can certainly do this with this disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. We can heal the fractures in the earth, and that sounds preposterous to some, but I don't really care what you think about it because it works. And I can show you photographic evidence. I'm going to write up a little piece on this and be posting these screenshots of the Doppler radar, the Titan radar, which was out of Columbus, Ohio, actually. And you can judge for yourself what you're seeing. It's very convincing. So I thought I would share that with you because we can put our intention and our thoughts and our prayers on solutions and visualizing solutions. Visualizing the earth being healed is a step in that direction. Now, I had for tonight's show, I had Mr. Ken Adachi book for the show, but Ken wasn't feeling up to his best, and so I had a standby guest lined up, and on very short notice, he agreed to come on the show tonight, and we're very fortunate to have him with us, and you're going to hear why as we talk to him. He is the owner of Dickinson Cattle Company Incorporated in Barnesville, Ohio. If you've listened to a Marine's Disquisition on Wind Talkers and on blogtalkradio.com, then you've heard the various ads that Drew Raines does for this fine company. And I got to tell you, I've tried some of their products, and they're out of this world. They're fantastic. And we're going to find out what is so special about Longhorn cattle, Longhorn beef, and the various products. Those of you who are meat eaters, who are into protein, and are concerned about being able to store food. These are just some of the benefits that are available to you. But I'll leave this for tonight's guest. I invite to Evident Footprints for the first time and welcome him as well, Mr. Daryl Dickinson of the Dickinson Cattle Company. Daryl, welcome to the show.
Hello, Don. I'm happy to be visiting with you here tonight.
Well, I'm very happy, as I just mentioned, that you were able to accept my invitation on such short notice. Ken will never miss a show unless he's really feeling under the weather, and you know, we wish him well. And I'm glad you were able to come on board and talk about some pretty important things. We've gotten a lot of disinformation over the past few years about what's going on in the beef industry, and I thought it would be really appropriate for you to let us know. You're an insider. I mean, you do this for a living, and I can tell the listeners that I've seen your ranch, and it's quite impressive. Most of all, the animals that you have, I think. They're just absolutely beautiful creatures, and I know your love for them and the care that you have for them. And so I think people are going to be inspired by what you have to say. So if you would, give us a background on, you know, how you got into this industry and how you ended up in Ohio and what your mission is, if you would.
Well, Don, we have a family ranch here in Belmont County, and we have three sons and a daughter that are all involved in some way with the ranch, and we run kind of an old-fashioned operation. We're not the real high-tech factory farm kind of programs that you talked about. We raise cattle without any steroids or hormones or antibiotics, and the main input for our livestock is grass, just good, wholesome Ohio native grasses and spring water. So it's almost so simple. You wouldn't think it would work, but it does and always has. So we raise and maintain about 1,200 head of cattle. We have just a few employees because we have a good system and good people, and management is pretty easy, and the cattle are pretty smart. So we raise Texas Longhorns, African Watusi, and Dutch Bulingo cattle. Texas Longhorns are our main breed. So interesting things have happened. You hear on the news about Agriculture Secretary Vilsack going to Japan or Korea, trying to open up those countries for the export of U.S. beef, and how important it is to export beef from the United States to these other countries. And in fact, last year in the United States, we imported $2 billion worth of beef. So it's fascinating why it's such a big deal to export when we don't produce enough beef in this nation to feed our people. So we're an import nation depending on other countries who may or may not like us to produce our food and to feed us, which is a little scary. So right now, 80% of the seafood that people eat in the United States is imported from countries outside the United States. 65% of the fruit and vegetables we eat is imported from countries outside the United States. It's crazy. We import around 70% of the petroleum that we need. So things need to change. We need to be self-sufficient as a nation. And I talked to a Rotary over at Lancaster, Ohio last month, and I told them that, you know, everybody wants to be a patriotic American. One of the things you can do to be patriotic is grow beef and help supply the nation with wholesome, lean beef. And the other thing, plant some fruit trees, plant a garden. There's no reason why we should import 65% of our fruits and vegetables. Most people have a backyard big enough to plant half a dozen fruit trees in it and produce enough fruit for their families and neighbors and friends that's healthy, and you know where it was grown and you know what hands picked it. So a lot of things we do are pretty simple. So we have Texas Longhorn cattle. We raise an all-natural beef product. We sell ground beef, halves of beef, freezer beef, and we have a heat-and-serve roast beef. It's probably the only can of meat that you can buy. It has the omega-3 content on the side. So it's USDA inspected and everything. So we ship it all over the world. And we just have an old-fashioned business here. We sell breeding stock for people that want to start raising their own herd of cattle. And we sell meat products. And we feed about 1% of the people in our county all of the beef that they eat, which doesn't sound like very much. But we can compete very ruthlessly locally. And we're competing against people in Brazil and Australia and around the world in our own local way. So that's kind of who we are and what we do. And you've been here, Don. You've seen our operation. You've seen what we do. Our products aren't expensive. So we're just trying to increase our business, trying to get some more people like yourself to try out our products. That's about it.
You know, I have to even comment that the public restrooms there, which are in the style of outhouses,
hey, are we going to the outhouse already?
I just have to comment on this. Inside, it's cleaner than any hospital I've ever seen. Okay.
I just hope not, Don. Surely there's a cleaner hospital.
Oh, you would be surprised. You would be surprised what's out there.
Well, you know, a motel or any kind of a business, you're known by your bathrooms.
Mm-hmm. Well, one might ask why you have these public restrooms. Well, you conduct tours, too. You have a lot of people that come, I'm sure, a lot of the schools and senior citizens, groups, people who are interested in learning about what you're doing. I mean, it's fascinating to see the layout and the animals and how you run the operation. I mean, I see no fault in anything that you're doing. And it raises a lot of questions in my mind. Number one, you know, why this disparity? I think I know politically and in terms of geoeconomics, I can see that that they're trying to make us dependent on other countries, and they're probably doing that to build up the economy of this country or other countries while tearing down the economy of this country. But do you think we are capable as a nation of producing a sufficient number of beef products for our own people that we don't have to be importing?
Well, yeah, it's silly, Don, for us to think we need to import $2 billion worth of beef. Right here in Ohio, for instance, you can drive around the country in the fall, and you'll see crop residue of corn stalks and soybean fields and alfalfa fields that were not harvested that would graze thousands of head of cattle right here in Ohio that the farmers don't even have fences around their pastures. They just let it stand in the fields and just rot there when they could be grazing and producing beef from it. There's just some management things that the old-timers did, the Amish people do, that today it seems like people are maybe too lazy to do, or it's so easy to import something economical from some other country and not bother to go out and do it yourselves. But we waste more cattle feed in the state of Ohio than some western states grow, which is typical of many eastern states that have a lot of fiber, a lot of grass standing in the fall. Just mm-hmm. let it go to waste. We're a very wasteful country. You're talking about changing the weather and things, and you remember the story in the Bible, Don, about the Lord Jesus feeding 5,000 people, and mm-hmm. they had the fishes and the loaves of bread, and you remember what he said after they got through feeding the 5,000 people? He told
I think he said something like, anyone want seconds?
No, oh, probably so. But after that, it said that they went around and picked up the pieces that there be no waste.
Yes.
So even the Lord Jesus, who received the fish and the loaves free, he said, "Let's don't waste anything." But we've lost that concept in the United States. We're a very wasteful country, and it's just a sloppy attitude. We don't have to be that way, and it's wise not to be wasteful.
Well, yeah, in a sense, I think we've been misled quite a bit about what is really going on in that regard, and so people don't really have a respect for food, except those that have gone without. Certainly,
yeah.
those that have experienced extreme poverty or homelessness certainly know what that's like, to have to beg for food or beg for money so they can buy food. And imagine supporting a family and going through an experience like that. These are the times which have befallen our country, and I think we're going to learn one way or another. But I don't think this should be forced upon us by a political party or by a government. You know, you create the circumstances that you have to face throughout your life, and we have to become responsible for these things. We have to educate ourselves, which is one reason why I enjoy having you here tonight, so that we can remove some of the mystique out of this industry and show people that there is somebody out there that's doing it the right way and that cares. You sell your cattle to other ranchers. You also offer stud services because of the quality of the very cattle that you have, and that speaks volumes for what you're doing. What is it that maybe some of these other countries, or maybe even some people in this country, are doing that you feel is not right? In terms of maybe veterinary practices or were the feed. Is there a better way to allow cattle to grow, beef cattle?
Well, there's a lot of things being written about grass-fed beef right now to totally grow cattle on grass. So our ground beef product is totally grass-fed. So if somebody wants a 100% grass-fed product, we have that available. People buy a 50-pound box or one package at a time, and we do something special in our ground beef. We grind the steaks, the roast, the whole thing into our grind product. Normally when people buy ground beef in a grocery store, that grocery store takes all the steaks, the fillets, the T-bones, the roast, and the high-dollar value cuts, removes that from the carcass, and everything is left, like between the ribs and around the shoulders and the neck and the forearms and stuff, and then that, with the fat, becomes the ground beef. Well, it's what we refer to as a garden variety ground beef, but the beef that we sell is all the steaks ground with the meat, all of the whole body. So that gives you not just a garden variety product, but a ground steak product, boneless with around 92% lean, 92-94% lean, which is, we think, a higher quality than is being offered in most of the organic or in the grocery stores. So we've got to look at the future, Don, in livestock production as to where we're going with it, right? All of a sudden, here in the last few years, our government decided, well, we're going to start producing fuel with ethanol using mostly corn. And so these ethanol plants are subsidized by the government all over the nation. So they started using around 20% of the corn for ethanol production to be self-sufficient and not have to be dependent upon other countries for our petroleum. So now the government says, well, we need maybe 20% more of that grain to make ethanol. So what has happened, that grain that was being used for the production of chickens, turkeys, pork, and cattle feeding has gone to ethanol. So it may be, Don, and it's hard to see the future because political things will, you know, things will be going pretty smooth and all of a sudden some dumb political decision will be made. But it could be in 3 to 5 years from now that poultry production could drop in half or even drop to a third in the United States because of availability of grains. The dairy industry is in pain now because of the price of grains. But many of the things that feedlot cattle, chickens, hogs, turkeys, or even dairy cattle get to eat, like up to 90% of what they eat is human consumable grains. So as the government keeps gulping down the grains, and that isn't available for these meat animals, in only a few years we may see meat in the United States drop by, the availability may drop by half or even three-fourths due to bad political decisions. So it may be that the politics says, hey, which do we want to do? Do we want to drive cars or do we want to eat? And so at that point, we see problems for the pork and the poultry people. You can't just take millions of chickens and turn them out on grass and still produce the volume that Colonel Sanders wants to sell us back. So now you can't just turn these hogs out to graze on the pastures, but if we fed no grain at all here on the ranch, we could grow the same amount of cattle or beef 5 years or 3 years from now as we're growing now, because we're 99% grain or grass-fed cattle without the use of grain. So I'm predicting, Don, and nobody this will probably be the first time this was ever said on the radio to where people could hear this, but in 5 years from now, or 10 years, somebody's going to say something, and they're going to be regarded as very profound. They're going to say that the hero of the meat-producing industry is the animal that will produce human-consumable food and not utilize any human-consumable food to produce it. Mm-hmm. And nobody said this publicly. There's no articles being written on it. But it's one thing to take a ton of corn and produce human-consumable food. It's another thing to take a ton of grass, berry vines, tree leaves, and briars, and use a Texas longhorn to turn that into a steak. That's quite a wonderful thing without taking human consumable food. So the people in the cities really don't want to come out here to the ranch and get on their knees and eat grass. We believe the longhorn cattle is positioning our business and other people who raise them to a non-grain production in the future. I believe in 10 years from now, if you drive through northern Texas, western Kansas, you may not see any cattle feedlots. And in the trade magazines that you read about the cattle industry, there will not be any articles about that. It's like as if that part of the world will never change. But if there's if the government decides they want 70% of the grain for ethanol, it can change in days. So I think we have to look down the road further. We have to position ourselves, take care of our families, our friends, and we need to be more concerned about food production and producing food without human consumable input. Does that make any sense, Don?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It actually brings up quite a few points in regard to what you mentioned, too. First of all, this thing about peak oil is a ruse, and we have more oil in the United States than major producers in other parts of the world have combined. So they're not really telling the general public the truth in that regard. And really, ethanol is not necessary. They say, well, it may burn cleaner, it may be less expensive. Yet the company that uses more ethanol than any other, I think, is BP, and they're at the root of this problem that we have in the Gulf of Mexico. They're one of the there's no price reduction for their gasoline and oil products. Despite the fact that they put ethanol in the gasoline, you pay more money. It's 10% ethanol, and they're taking food away from human beings when they do this.
Yeah, that's right.
So that is a concern. Now, you mentioned poultry. I wanted to ask you, and you reminded me of this film, which I saw maybe about 6 weeks ago or so. Are you familiar with a film called Food Incorporated?
Yes, I saw that one time. I want to watch it another time or two, but there's some sensationalism in that's difficult to identify with. But there's an old saying that just because you like to eat sausage doesn't mean you want to watch sausage made. And the Food Inc. program showed you close-ups of how you make sausage, and how you kill them and grind them and bleed them. And some of this stuff, the public just didn't have the stomach ready to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing to buy a steak or even go to Colonel Sanders and buy a chicken dinner. It's another thing to watch somebody bleed a chicken and kill it and cut it in pieces, and have your kids sit there and watch it. And these are things that are normal things of life, but not what you go to a movie theater and sit down and say, "Woo, isn't that a nice thing?" You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was some really true stuff in it, and there was a fellow on that, Don, that was talking about how important organic was and how organic was so great. But these big, huge factory farms that they were making out as the enemy, the reason those huge factory farms and those big conveyor belts were rolling at 100 miles an hour was because that's what it takes to feed this nation. This country is not going to feed itself. They're not going to plant a garden. They're getting too lazy to do that. They can't do the organic thing with as much volume as they need. And so, you know, I saw some things in it that were really sort of eye-openers in a way, but mm-hmm. nevertheless, it was the old theory about watching sausage made. I thought it was very sensational.
Yeah, for your edification, I brought that up because what I found probably the most disturbing was the conditions that the chickens were raised in, the amount of filth and the amount of disease, and this feeding them or giving them the veterinary substances that would cause them to put on weight more rapidly. And there were so many, it seemed to me like there were so many things being done that just weren't natural. And I have to tell the listeners that I was on a cattle ranch, and you couldn't tell by sniffing the air that you were on a cattle ranch. That's how clean everything was. That's how pristine everything was. The animals themselves were ready to be in a movie. You know, they didn't need makeup. They didn't need to be cleaned or brushed or combed or defleed or deloused. These animals are absolutely beautiful. And they're out there in a natural environment where they're free to move around and live and breathe. And they weren't restrained and constrained. So I think that has a lot to do, your total approach to raising these animals and producing a product in the most natural way adds immensely to the quality of the product. And I think other industries can learn from what you're doing. That's why I brought that up, basically. But I do agree with you on some of the more grosser points of that film, that it is a bit shocking. What was shocking to me is that they take these diseased animals and they get into the food chain like the healthy ones. And then it makes you wonder, are any of them really healthy?
Well, you talk about chickens and small animals like that. Don, we process cattle and they go through an Ohio State inspection or USDA inspection. And I am mm-hmm. told that the inspectors test our cattle for 28 things when they go through this process. They take a blood sample and they check the blood. They check to see if the animals have had any vaccinations or any injection sites in the meat. And they will condemn an animal if they find that they've had antibiotics within a certain period of time to where it shows up visually in the meat. So if you watch what all they do to protect people from some of these problems, I saw those things were omitted from the Food Inc. film, the inspectors and those people who do a really good job. It was like as if all the inspectors turned their head and just let any disease go by. But I'm a person that I've had cattle that were rejected. I had a bull one time that didn't get around good. When you came in our office, you saw a big head of a skull of a big, beautiful bull, a Watusi bull that's hanging on our wall. It's 75-inch horns tip to tip. And he mm-hmm. got to where he couldn't walk really good and lost some weight. And so we thought, well, you know, he's just getting some age on him, and we'll grind this bull and harvest him while he's still healthy. And so we could see a deterioration in his health. So we took him to the processing plant, and when they hung him up on the rail and checked him, they found that he had tumors up under his spine, and that the reason he wasn't walking good is he had the tumors that were eating in around his spinal nerves. So they condemned this bull that had 600 pounds of ground beef on him, and so he is thrown away because of that. So these inspectors, they're there to protect people from anything that might cause them harm. And, I've had cattle that looked like they were okay to they were healthy enough to be processed, but when they cut them up in pieces or did blood tests or something, they says, no, these, we're going to reject these. They're not acceptable for human consumption. Although I couldn't tell on the outside that there was that problem. They dug into them and did the test. So while they're doing 28 tests on a steer and finding one thing wrong, they can't do 28 tests on a chicken that weighs 3 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
You can't afford to hire them to do all of these tests. They can't do it. So the larger the animal, the more tests they can afford to do, so the more health conscious people can be more comfortable with eating beef that has a number of tests than these small animals that they can't afford a lot of tests.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I thought I would bring that up because it's from what I saw, and you and I spent a good 3 hours together, and you basically showing me how you run your whole operation, and you certainly didn't have anything to hide, and you should be very proud of what you've created. I'm sure you are, but if there was any doubt in your mind, you've got my vote. I can tell you that.
Well, we don't do anything very high-tech, Don. We're just old-fashioned, and we have people buy our ground beef, and they said, when I was a kid, we had beef that tastes like this, and we haven't tasted that kind of beef in years. And the deal is, today, people grow very fast-gaining cattle. And I know people that their goal is to have what they call 12-12 beef, 12 months old and weigh 1,200 pounds. And this is a very fast-gaining type of an animal. The deal is, when you process one, they taste like veal, which is a very bland meat that some people very much like, but others want something with a little more robust flavor to it. So our cattle that we process for our freezer beef are 24 to 29 months old. And the time it takes to develop the flavor is it's not the snap of a finger. We have more age on our beef on the hoof, and therefore there's more flavor with some time that they have to develop. And that's what people notice the difference. They notice a flavor that only comes with time.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you, in the process of dealing with a lot of people from different parts of the country, or even different parts of the world for that matter, do you have a lot of questions posed as to, what is the best way to raise these cattle? Because it doesn't seem to me that everyone's doing what you're doing.
Well, the people, Don, like in Australia, and we have a lot of dear friends in Australia that buy semen from us. And beef production in Australia is not how much they can gain in a feedlot. It's how many pounds can they gain, how big a calf can they raise per year, and how far can they walk to water on these big ranches in Australia. For instance, The largest ranch in the United States is the Navajo Nation, which is in mostly Arizona, but also New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado. So the Navajo Nation runs one cow, one goat, and one sheep per 147 acres of land. So their average live calf crop for every 100 cows on the Navajo Nation is 43 weaned calves per year. So it's not about how fast they will grow. It's which cows can have a live calf unassisted and live until weaning under that harsh condition. And much of the West is not lush. It's how far a cow can walk to harvest it. And cattle are wonderful in that they'll grow a steak out there harvesting grass and fibers without human help, without labor. They'll just go do it. So we've got to identify the fiber that's here with efficient breeds of cattle that require very little labor. And, of course, that's the reason we raise Texas Longhorns. That's the reason we export frozen semen to Australia and New Zealand and some of these countries, because they want to do the same thing. They want to raise cattle economical and have cattle basically raised themselves without a lot of human help. And they don't want to be out there giving them shots and stuff all the time.
Yeah, and it seems to me that the more natural their environment throughout their lives, the less that's required.
Well, absolutely. And you want to, you know, like here in Ohio, we're so blessed. We just had an inch of rain tonight. You're talking about the storms, and we had a little wind, but we had an inch of rain came, and yesterday morning we had an inch, and about 2 weeks ago we had 5 inches. So our grass is just unbelievably lush. It looks like a prime season in New Zealand or something. But in the West, you know, there's people out there from the middle of Kansas West just love to get a half an inch of rain, just a quarter of an inch, just anything, because they're so dry.
Yeah. Well, I'm a proponent of rain. But not
absolutely
necessarily tornadoes, you know.
Oh, yes.
There's a bit of a difference, you know.
Yes.
You like to wake up the next day and know your house is still there, you know.
Yes.
You have a roof over your head and somewhat a semblance of a yard and trees and, you know, plants, flowers, those things.
Yeah, mailbox.
Yeah, mailboxes, cars, or trucks, you know.
Right.
Those are helpful. Well, I guess where do we go from here? Certainly,
well, one of the things, Don, that we're kind of enthused about is our heat and serve roast beef product. We have an all grass fed roast beef product that we sell in a 28-ounce can that is all made in the USA. We compete with Brazilian products. Our product is all beef, with just a tiny pinch of salt in it, and it just has two ingredients. You can make beef and noodles, stews, roasts, sandwiches, barbecue, and we have a growing market among the emergency food provision people who are wise enough to provide food for their families in case of an emergency of a flood or whatever might happen. And so it's smart for people to have 2 weeks, a month, a year of storable food for their family. And our canned products have gone so well with our beef that we raise here. We're also getting an all-natural turkey and an all-natural pork that we get from the company that does our canning. And we have the three different meat products that we sell to the emergency food provision people. So this is a fast-growing group of people that love their families and want to be prepared. Years ago, the city of Springfield, Missouri, had an ice storm and snapped off the electric poles and wires, and parts of that city were without electricity for 38 days. So those people weren't very prepared. But it's easy to talk about emergency provision in Springfield, Missouri right today, because those people want to be prepared the next time. And many of these things, we're not going to get the message until we have an event and we don't have food for our families. But we have people that they pay their bills and they call us and they order $100, $200 worth of cases of our heat and serve beef, and we ship it to them UPS every day. UPS comes by and hauls away piles of boxes of our beef, and it's got a five-year shelf life on it, and all they got to do is just store it where it doesn't freeze and break the seal, and just store it in the basement or wherever, and 5 years it'll be just like today. So that's one of the things we're doing. It's kind of a fun product, and we take cattle right off grass and spring water, and they're pressure cooked in the can, ready to serve. You eat it right out of the can, or set your can in the edge of a campfire on your front lawn, and you're good to go.
Yeah, and I've tried those products, and I have. Yourself, they're fabulous.
You've ate some of our heat and serve beef.
The beef and the turkey.
How did you eat the beef?
From top to bottom.
Top to bottom.
Actually, I made like a barbecue with it. And I shared it with some friends who just flipped over it. Where did you get this beef? This is fantastic. I didn't tell them anything about it. You know, I just served it. And the turkey, I had served. I had made sort of a stir fry with that.
Oh, okay.
And added it at the end just to warm it up because it's already cooked. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you again, same people flipped out over it. The jerky is just marvelous. And I know a lot of people that like jerky. And, you know, can you get more of that? That was a question. Where can I get
it? Well, see, people are used to buying jerky at a store. If you're walking down a counter of a store and you see jerky in a sack, in store temperature, you're buying a product with a massive amount of preservatives on it. Most of those products have a one-year shelf life at a 70-degree temperature. So you know there's some stout preservatives there. And when people eat that jerky, they have a pickly taste to it. I think it's a pickly taste that comes with those preservatives. So our product doesn't have those same preservatives. In fact, we keep our jerky frozen all the time, and it's got about a one-week shelf life on the dash of your car, but most people eat it in about a few hours once they open it. But it doesn't have the preservatives, and it won't last a year out on the shelf, so we keep it frozen. But that's the way jerky was. When the Pony Express had it in the saddlebags going across the West, that's the way jerky was made, around a campfire on a trail drive. But the modern jerky people buy that has that long shelf life is full of junk that most of them, if they knew what was in it, they wouldn't eat it.
Oh, yeah. And considering it's jerky, as soon as you begin chewing it, it practically melts in your mouth. I mean, it is so good. And I talked to Drew about this on his show when I told him I'd been out to your place, and he said, "Did you try the jerky?" And I said, "Yes, I did." And isn't it great? You know, he flips out over it. I've got to put together a care package for him on that because he can't.
Well,
keep
we sent him. We sent a truckload of cattle through Arkansas about 2 weeks ago, and Drew met our driver at a restaurant about daylight in Little Rock, Arkansas, and we took him down a box of frozen beef and a bunch of different stuff, and So we got him up in the wee hours, and he took our driver out for breakfast, and we delivered the product to him. But we're probably one of the few people that will deliver a bunch of groceries in a cattle truck. Just put them in the sleeper in the back of this guy's truck, and old Drew was tickled to get them. But we saved him $150 worth of freight, you know. So what's the deal? Do what you can do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I recommend it. I mean, we're not trying to turn the show into a commercial per se, but if anyone is interested, we're going to be giving that information out in a little bit. Daryl, we've got a caller on the line. We've got Jane from Arizona. Jane, welcome to the show. Do you have a question for Daryl Dickinson?
Absolutely not. Hi, Don. Hi, Daryl. I just wanted to tell you that I ordered a case of the 4 beef and the 4 pork and the 4 turkey last fall, maybe early on in the year, and I love it, and I gave some away so that other people could try it, and all I got was, wow, that's so good. Where do I get some? And it is just awesome, awesome stuff. And I'm getting ready, actually, Daryl, to order some more.
Well, so good, Jane. Thank you very much. Where do you live in Arizona?
I'm west of Phoenix. I'm out in the desert west of Phoenix.
You're at Goodyear.
No, further west.
Further west. I got a sister that lives at Goodyear, so. Okay, Tonopah.
Okay.
Yeah. I bought a herd of cattle at Tonopah one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
There was a guy there named Paul White, was an old desert rancher that had a herd of longhorn cattle out there, and he got old and called me, and I bought his whole herd from his wife at Tonopah, Arizona.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I haven't seen any longhorns out here, but we definitely have cattle.
Well, I bought everyone he had. His name was Paul White.
Hmm.
Yeah, those cattle are now in Ohio. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Now, that was a while ago. True. Their granddaughters and grandsons are in Ohio. So.
Oh, okay.
Well, thank you for ordering our products. And, you know, we're competing with the largest beef production systems in the world. There's a product comes out of Brazil, and it's grass-fed beef, quote, with gravy. And 40% of what's in the can is water and grease. That's just a gravy mix that comes with it. And they advertise it with gravy, and yet they sell about $2 a can cheaper than us and make more money than we do. But that's one of our most serious competitors is the Brazilian beef with gravy.
Well, you know, there's so much meat in that can. I had a lot of meals. I think I made like a stroganoff with it once, and just, you know, just got creative with the other stuff, and just add this, add that, and have at it. But it's so good. So good.
Well, thank you, Jane.
I did have a question about the jerky, because I wanted to find out, is it spicy hot?
Well, we don't have a, you know, you go to a convenience store, and there'll be 20 flavors of jerky, hot, medium, and not hot, or whatever. And ours is just a sort of a medium. People that want it really hot say it's not hot enough, and people that don't want any heat to it at all say it's too hot. So we're just in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to say, from my experience, it's like a pepper hot, you know. It's it's a flavor more than anything else. You know, there's no discomfort whatsoever with it. I've had some of these red hot jerkies before, and, you know, you want to guzzle a gallon of water to put the fire out. It's just nothing like that. It is... It's very mild and very flavorful.
In our research, we have found that the public likes the smoke flavor more than they like a salt or a pepper flavor. But
mm-hmm.
The public really likes a smoke flavor. So we're strong on the smoke part of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe I didn't describe it accurately. I was referring to the heat. But
it is a
smoked jerky. And it's really good.
Thanks.
If you've heard Drew talk about it, I mean, Drew can't keep it around. You know?
Yeah, I know. I've heard him talk about it, and you know, he was the one that it was through him that I learned about you, Daryl, and so I had to try it, and I just finally have some extra funds where I can get some more. So,
and you know what's amazing here and rather ironic? Here we are talking about food, and everybody's excited mm-hmm. about this food. I mean, it is that good, you know?
It is.
It is that good.
And I like the fact that it has, like, a 5-year shelf life because that's, you know, I'm putting food away. I'm gathering food and putting it away. So
you got to order extra because you're going to dig into it. You know,
oh yes, oh,
emergency
definitely.
Or not.
Yes.
You know,
yes. when my driver,
one thing, you know, because you get this storable food. It's okay. This is for an emergency. I got to try this.
It's
an emergency now. I'm going to try it.
Exactly. Yeah,
Don.
Sure.
When my driver delivered the beef to Drew down there at Little Rock,
mm-hmm.
I said, "Well, I never have met Drew. What's he like?" Oh, he says he's a sharp fellow, and said, "Well, what's he like?" He says, "Well, he's a little funny." He said, "He's the first guy I've ever met that packs a pistol while he's mowing his lawn."
Well, you got to give him a couple of longhorns to do the lawn mowing there. You know,
build a fence.
Yeah, there you go.
There. Yes.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much, and I'm going to get off and let you guys continue. Have a great one, and you'll be hearing from me probably tomorrow.
Daryl. Okay. Thank you for calling, Jane.
You're welcome.
Bye
bye.
Take care. Bye. There you go. You know, I know three people right from the horse's mouth that this great product you have now. And it really raises the question, why wouldn't the USDA, for example, want to promote your product or, not just your product, but the same product, all over
the
place?
Well, we're USDA inspected and, canned beef is an old product. It's not new and fancy. It's something that many people's grandparents did was to can beef. It's kind of like it's so old that it's just we're beyond that. And many of the old things are coming back. It just makes sense to do things the old ways sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So you think that we are, as a country, as a nation, and as a consortium of cattle ranchers, we have the wherewithal to produce enough of this meat that we don't need to be importing it from other countries.
Absolutely. I think people are just wasting fiber that could turn into beef and steaks. They're wasting it. We should be totally self-sufficient, maybe not with our fish. We should be with our petroleum. I don't think that would be that hard. And with fruits and vegetables, piece of cake, and with beef, nothing to it. We should produce all of that stuff here in the U.S. and be totally self-sufficient.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And also, I think what's occurring in all of those areas you just mentioned is our products are being exported, and farmers are not getting, I don't feel, what they deserve for the products that they produce. And the foreign markets are being undercut in price. In other words, our producers are getting less than what their product is worth. And those products are being shipped to foreign countries and put on the market to compete with the local foods there. Mexico is a perfect example. The farmers there can't compete with the low prices of the produce coming in from the United States. That's insane that they can't stay in business. It's as though this is intended to destroy the businesses in each country and allow the government or some private entity to move in and buy up these businesses. Somebody like Monsanto, for example, who will just kill it, basically, and replace it with GM foods. And that's a whole other issue. We could do another show on that.
Well, Monsanto is a crazy ball of string there that's wild, and I don't pretend to understand the Monsanto appetite.
Yeah, well, we can presume that your animals aren't consuming pesticides, they're well taken care of, but they're not given hormones to cause them to grow unnaturally faster than they would in a natural environment.
How much time do we have, Don?
Well, we're almost out of time, but we can take a few more minutes if you want to expound on what I just said.
What you just said, one of the things, the average animal that a housewife buys a steak, for instance, at a grocery store, she is the eighth owner of that steak, average the eighth owner. And cattle are bought, sold, and shipped all around the country. And each time they're bought and sold and shipped, they get a new bunch of shots and the new vaccines for new diseases. And then the more stressing they are on the semis, the more disease that there is that needs to be dealt with. And one of the things we do, Don, is just cheap. We own an animal from conception to consumption. There's nobody else owns it from the time it's born until our clients buy the jerky that you eat. You buy one owner jerky. It hasn't been hauled all over the world. It hasn't been on the wheat pastures of Kansas or the mountains of Colorado. It's been right here in our pasture. So that's a way you can have less antibiotics needed. If you don't stress your cattle as much and don't subject them to strenuous things like hauling all the country, you can raise cattle cheaper with less medication. And that's just something we do it's not a big deal, but we don't understand why everybody doesn't do that. Makes no sense to us to do it any different. We save a lot of money. When we sell you a pound of hamburger, there's no diesel fuel used to haul that cow from one state to the next. Boy, it's just simple.
And you're not putting the additives that are put in commercial venues, let's say like in grocery stores where they add ice and food coloring. When I opened a package of the ground beef, and I got that from you in frozen form, and I thawed out a package of that, and I made a chili with that, I didn't have the feeling that I should have bought a coloring book, when I opened it up. The texture of the meat inside and out was consistent, and there was no food coloring in it. And yet it was red. It was fresh. It didn't smell funny or funky, as we say sometimes. You know, it was natural. And you're saying eight owners. It really raises a lot of questions. There are obviously a few middlemen or two.
Oh, no, absolutely. Your eight owners, Don. Let's say you've got a guy that owns the cow, and he fed her a year to have a calf. And then he sells the calf at an auction. Then a cattle trader buys that calf and may ship him from Ohio to Kansas. Then a wheat farmer buys that calf and puts it on wheat to get a good gain. and then he sells it, and it goes to Colorado to the mountains for the summer, and they get a good gain in the mountains of Colorado. And then they go to an auction and sell it in a feedlot in Greeley, Colorado, buys that calf. And then it's sold to a packer in Omaha, and then it comes back to your friendly grocery store where you live by Toledo, Don. And then the grocery store sells it, and the housewife buys it. But it's very easy to get an average of 8 owners from the guy that owns the cow to the consumer. And some of them have more owners than that. But all of those things require hauling and different stressing elements that is just amazing that it's such a complicated system.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah, it's unnecessarily so. And then in the end, the consumer gets the short end of the stick in that respect. Also, I would presume that you don't irradiate your food, and I would have to assume that there are some that do irradiate their foods.
There's a lot of articles being written on that in the food processing magazines where you can take something that's kind of tough and make it more tender. And we use an old-fashioned method called a hamburger grinder. It makes it very tender.
Mm-hmm.
It's just pretty simple.
Yeah. No chemicals and...
No, not necessarily. Not necessary at all.
Yeah. Well, I know there are many other issues in terms of this industry that you are quite capable of addressing, and I would like to invite you back if you'd come back and talk to us about some of the things going on that that people should be aware of, and ways that people can participate if they want to voice their concerns about the treatment of these animals and ultimately the way people get treated because of maybe mistreatment and excessive abuses in the industry that are maybe overlooked. And the constraints that are put on the industry too, because if we have the ability to produce food, we should expect that we can do that.
Well, it would be nice if the government would just leave things alone and quit subsidizing, like ethanol. If the government didn't subsidize ethanol would have never happened.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show, Daryl. Please give out your web address and any contact information you want people to have so that they can either go online or call you and place an order.
Very good. Our store is www.headtotail.com, H-E-A-D, the number 2-T-A-I-L.com. We sell mounted heads, tanned hides, and everything in between. Then our ranch where we sell live cattle is www.texaslonghorn.com. TexasLonghorn.com. So we're here in eastern Ohio, Belmont County, and so we do tours every day in the summer. People come and do our bus tours of the ranch, and they buy meat product at our store and buy live cattle. We just sent a load to Texas yesterday, and we're getting ready to send a load to western Oklahoma next week, and we ship them all over.
And you've also got some other fine products in your store there at the ranch that are worth checking out. I've been checking out that blackstrap molasses. And I haven't tried the hot pepper garlic yet, but I will.
Well, we don't have but a few food items. But there's stuff that... we're real comfortable with it. We think are healthy and they're practical.
Yeah. Well, Daryl Dickinson, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show at the last minute. And I'd love to have you back. As I mentioned to you, I'm usually booked up at the beginning of the month all the way through the month. So if you could make some time for us in July, I'd love to have you back and talk some more about this important animal that you raise and the impact that it can have on the food industry around the whole world, really.
Well, thank you, Don. I'll always be happy to visit with you anytime. And we enjoyed when you came down to the ranch the other day.
Well, I guarantee you I will again, in fact, because I'm going to have to be getting more jerky for Drew, so, amongst other things that he likes. So I thank you, and I wish you a good evening, and look forward to my next visit there, too.
Very good, Don. Thank you, sir.
All right. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Mr. Daryl Dickinson of the Dickinson Cattle Company. A special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and blogtalkradio.com for broadcasting Evident Footprints. Also want to thank Don Newsom on the sound at BBS, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be none other than former U.S. Marine Drew Malone Raines III. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.